With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Oh, hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay, how are you?
Gentlemen, how you doing?
We're good.
Doing
Jeff great. Phelps here, Andy Baskin over there. We were just discussing this, Jay. What's college athletics going to look like in 20 years? I can't even imagine it. And if anybody can, it's you. What does college basketball
no pressure.
Look like? Yeah, no pressure on
no
you.
No pressure.
What's college basketball look like in 20 years? What's college football look like in 20 years?
I don't mean to throw it back at you, but what are you worried about? Like, what are you worried that it's going to look like that's going to be a problem?
I don't know that it's going to be a problem, Jay. It's just that it's like at the upper end of football and basketball, it's as close to a pro product as you can get. And I don't mind that. But I just wonder, does it go any further than that? You know, eligibility, you only get 5 years to play, whatever it's going to be. That to me kind of puts a cap on it. And I wonder if it can go any further in any other way. I don't know that it can, Jay.
Well, first of all, it can be anything they want it to be. So, you know, college sports can put whatever eligibility rules they want. You can play 5 years and get four. You can have 6 years to play five, whatever they want. There's no cap on how long you could be a student. And I don't think there's any movement that, you know, they want college sports played by people that aren't enrolled in school somehow. So that's not the issue. But really sort of all the hand-wringing, I'm not saying you guys are doing this, but all the hand-wringing and complaining right now from coaches, athletic directors, and administrators is really kind of laughable when they talk about, you know, there's a cataclysmic change and transformational period. The real transformational period came in 1984, the last time the NCAA was before the U.S. Supreme Court. And at that time, it was called the Board of Regents case. And at that time, the NCAA used to tell the schools how often they could be on television because they were trying to protect gate receipts. They thought if you flood the market with a TV product, people would stop going to the games in their infinite wisdom. And they would really, you know, injure their ability to make money off gate receipts, off ticket sales. And so the schools sued the NCAA and says, you can't tell us that we can't cut our own media deals and be on television whenever we want. We can grow our programs that way, become more popular, make more money, all that stuff. And so the Supreme Court agreed. They sued under the same theory as the Alston plaintiffs did recently that went before the Supreme Court, where the NCAA lost 9-0. And what that did was open up where schools could be on TV whenever they wanted. And for the first couple of years after that, in the mid-80s, you know, they didn't know exactly how to do it. How do we sell our rights? Do we sell them individually or do we pool them together by conference? And most of them did it by conference. Notre Dame sold theirs individually to NBC. And the world still remained on its axis. It's not a problem. But then billions of dollars started flowing through the system. And coaches that were making $100,000 started making millions upon millions. And nobody questioned whether this was pro. And the truth was, it was pro from back then and even before. The only thing that distinguishes college sports from professional sports are two things. One, the players are enrolled in school. And two, the organizing body, the NCAA, all the schools collectively banded together to say, here's what the players are allowed and nothing more. And the Supreme Court recently said that restriction is illegal. It's illegal. And so what we have now is just what you would expect. We have competition for the most important factor in winning, and that is the players. And, you know, I got a text recently when a kid named Nigel Pack transferred from Kansas State to Miami. The story was he went for an $800,000 deal, 2 years, $400,000 from a collective. And, you know, in order to get that money, he's got to do charity work and public appearances, things like that. So a Miami assistant said, that's more than I make. And I was like, he's worth more than you are. You know, it's true. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's true. And so the idea that strength coaches are making $750,000 and the players aren't worth anything is laughable. And, you know, just like they used to say when they restricted players, they said, hey, nobody's forcing you to play in college. All right. Well, nobody's forcing these schools to participate in this business. If all these coaches that are complaining, this was supposed to be about education, this is supposed to be about mentoring young people, well, go coach in Division II or Division III. Go coach in high school. You know, that's the purest form of it. Go ahead. But they don't want to because they want to make money and coach on the biggest stage and all that stuff. This is big business. And to pretend it's not by restricting the players is not going to work anymore. And not one fan has turned away in the last year or two now that the players have been able to monetize their name, image, and likeness. And for those who thought that this wouldn't be a part of recruiting, they're idiots. Of course it is a part of it, just like facilities were a part of it. You know, the idea that players have made decisions on where to go to school over the years based upon, well, this has the best engineering department, that's nonsense. They want to know, am I going to start as a freshman? What kind of offense do you run? Can you get me to the NFL or the NBA? Things like that. That's the way I made my decision when I came out of high school. I want to know who I was playing for, and am I going to be happy in my basketball life? And money is a factor in all of our business decisions. So for you, for me, for any student, that non-athlete student that's deciding where to go to school, they are thinking about money. How much is tuition? How much scholarship money can I get here versus there? Am I willing to go to a school, maybe not my first choice, but I can get a scholarship there versus the school I really want to go to where I'd have to pay for it? They make those decisions every single day. And athletes should be allowed that same choice. And look, nobody's going to turn away from this because the athletes are making money. They're not. And this is just what competition looks like. And so we're going to see more of this, and it'll normalize. They'll figure it out. And at some point, to your original question, here's where I think it's going to wind up. I think in the very near future, absent congressional intervention, I think schools are just going to sign players to contracts like they sign employees and coaches and administrators to contracts. It'll be clean, easy, and the parties can negotiate the terms of the contract at arm's length. It's not that difficult. But we're acting, you know, the people in charge are acting like it's difficult because they know what this means. They know that if the players are paid what they're worth, they're not going to get as much of this money. You know, that all of a sudden ADs aren't going to be worth as much because the players are what's worth something, or worth more, I should say. It's not that ADs aren't worth anything, but they're certainly not worth what they're being paid because they've got all this money and it doesn't have to go to the players up until now. Now it has to.
All right, Jay, I've learned a couple things here. One, I can't believe that Ohio State football was on PBS in Ohio when I was a kid on tape delay. And you were talking about the laws, and that just kind of explained that, you know, my childhood there about watching Ohio State football on tape delay on a Saturday night on the PBS and think about how much money was blown there. Two, I would never want to be in a courtroom with you sitting at the other table. I just want you to know that. And then the real question here is, when you, like, you talked about the governing body moving things forward. I see exactly what you're saying about the governing body of the NCAA working for Division II, working for Division III, even working for the old 1AA football system. My question is the NCAA going to be able to survive with high-end college football? And then the second part of that question would be, how about basketball, and is the NCAA still the right venue for basketball? Because, you know, it just takes five great guys on any given team, even in a small school, that can win the nation's heart with the NCAA tournament. And I love that about basketball. I don't see that in football, though.
That's not going to change. So the NCAA, in answer to your question, the NCAA is going to continue to exist, but it'll be diminished in its power. So I don't know how old you guys are. You sound incredibly old.
Thank you.
But when I was a kid, the AAU, the Amateur Athletic Union, was the most powerful athletic organization on the planet. They used to choose the Olympic team. They had a tremendous amount of authority. And now they're reduced to running summer basketball tournaments. It's a very small organization now relative to what it was, and it doesn't have the same juice it used to. That's where the NCAA is headed. It'll still be able to govern college sports in that it will be able to promulgate rules with regard to academic performance, eligibility, you know, things like that. They won't be able to govern the money anymore. That'll put them in jeopardy of antitrust lawsuits, and the future antitrust suits are going to come with gigantic damages awards. So they can't be in that business anymore, in my view, absent Congress coming in and giving them a a preemptive national standard, which Congress seems unlikely to do. But right now, the NCAA doesn't have any real authority over football. In 1984, with that Board of Regents case, football was taken away from the NCAA. They still make eligibility rules regarding football and health and safety protocols and all that stuff, but they don't control bowl games. They don't control the college football playoff. That's not $1 from football flows through the NCAA office. All the NCAA really has, the office in Indianapolis, they have the NCAA basketball tournament, men's and women's. That's it. That's the source of their funding. And we're not going to see that go away. The only way that goes away or is diminished is if the Power Five schools, and I think this is a probability in the future, the Power Five schools say, we're going our own way. We're going to start our own thing. Why should we share our money with all the 1,100 institutions? So when you hear things like, well, you know, if players can be paid, a competitive balance is gone. You know, there's going to be bidding wars. Like, it's funny, when it's a player, it's a bidding war. When it's for a coach, it's just business. You know, when one school can pay way more for a coach than another school, that's just called business and the market. When it's a player, it's a bidding war, and it's unfair and it's wrong, all that stuff. That stuff is total nonsense. But I think if they really wanted competitive balance, if the NCAA institutions, you know, all of them wanted competitive balance, they'd have revenue sharing. They'd share their money, but they don't. They don't want that. And to the point of the idea that people are going to turn away from this, the Big Ten is about to sign a contract that's going to pay them over $1 billion a year annually for media rights. That's going to be $70, $80 million per institution in the Big Ten. You telling me you can't run an athletic department and have women's sports and all these stuff they complain was going to go away with $70, $80 million bucks? And that's just off their media rights deal. I mean, there's more money that these schools make. And look, the whole thing, we've been lied to this whole time about how we don't make any money. Really? You don't make any money? You know, that would be like me saying, I really don't make any money. After I pay for my house, my country clubs, vacations, cars, education for my kids, I really don't have any money. I really didn't make any money. That's just nonsense. And we need to stop this crap. And just treat it for like it is. This is a multi-billion-dollar entertainment industry. And for those that say there needs to be rationality in the process, there needs to be rationality with what players are paid and what they can accept. What's rational about running a multi-billion-dollar entertainment industry off of a college campus? Like, that's not rational. And I'll leave you with this, because you probably want me off the air. But
I have one more question. I seriously could listen to you for 4 hours talk about this, because I love the rationale you're bringing behind all this, because some of these arguments where I hear, I'm like, man, I wish I should just have Jay on a drive where I can just play your answers over and over, because they're just so, I think you're dead on.
ESPN pays him for that, though. We don't.
Yeah, that's true. They pay way better than I do.
Well, think about it this way. If these colleges ran their drama departments like college sports, and they were putting on these Broadway type shows that people were waiting in line to see, and they started putting out movies, they started doing original content for Netflix and all these other things that were student run and starred, they had student stars and all that stuff, and they were making studio money, they were making hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, like the studios make. Do you honestly think that those students would say, yeah, that's okay, we're happy to do this for free while you guys make all this money off of us? There's no way. They and their parents and their guardians and families would go, wait a minute now, we want a piece of this. Are you kidding me? You know, they would say, this is a business, and we deserve to make money just like everybody else. And no other student other than an athlete is told what they can earn or accept in the marketplace while they're enrolled in school. We just have we've had for all these years this crazy notion of amateurism, which has always been a fiction. And we claim that you know, you're supposed to play for the love of the game, as if you get paid, you don't love it as much. That's totally stupid. And amateurism has not, because I went through it, amateurism does not make you a better person, a better student, a better athlete, a better anything. All it does is put money from your work into other people's pockets. And that's what we've had for at least the last 40 years, if not the last 100. And it's over. So all these, you know, the NCAA is trying to draw a line now. It used to be amateurism. And now the line is employment. They can't be employees. And you're like, why not? Just because you say so? Of course they can be employees. And it's clear that people want to pay these athletes because they're doing it. So you know, this restriction is nonsensical. And they're going to lose. It is not going to stand up long-term in court. I think they know that, but they're trying to stave it off as best they can and hope that if they complain enough about how bad things are, and they're not that bad because all the games are being played on time, all the checks are clearing, TV's doing great, the numbers are way up, they're hoping that Congress will come in and give them what they're asking for, which is an antitrust exemption so they can continue to legally violate the law going forward.
Jay Billis, last thing. Cavaliers, our Cleveland Cavaliers, unless drastic things happen, will be 14th in the NBA draft. Good or bad year to be 14th in the NBA draft?
Well, it's always it's never a bad thing unless you draft poorly. I mean, you know, you can think of a lot of examples over the years where teams in the middle of the draft got tremendous value out of that. And you can think of other years where Cleveland was number one. I mean, when Anthony Bennett, they were number one, didn't get value out of it. So it really depends on how you draft. Like when people look at the Golden State Warriors, said, look, they built through the draft. Steph Curry was the 7th pick. Klay Thompson, if I remember correctly, was the 11th pick in his year. And Draymond Green was like number 32. They got three Hall of Famers, and they didn't have a top 5 pick to get them. So it's really about drafting intelligently. And I'm not saying there's a Klay Thompson out there every year at 11 or a Draymond Green at 32, but Nikola Jokic was a 2nd-round pick, Manu Ginobili's 2nd-round pick. We've seen a lot of that over the years. It's really about making the best decision you can at your given slot if you decide to stay there.
Jay, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Jay. Love it. Love the conversation.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.